This side contains exercises that ask you to close your eyes and use visualization techniques. You may want to wait to listen to this side until you're not driving, so you can relax completely and get full benefit from this tape.
We've talked about so far the power of human communication, but what are we using communication for? I've talked about using communication to get yourself to take action, but really, what do we need to do to get ourselves to take action? How do we need to communicate to ourselves? What's the element that makes the difference in the quality of how you behave and how you feel? Well, the element that I believe makes a difference is something I call state. Your state of mind and emotions at any moment in time will determine how much of your resources are available to you.
How many of you, as an example, just to kind of help us find out what the cause or the creation of human behavior is, how many of you have ever had an experience where you did something, and then after you did it, you went, oh God, I can't even believe I did that? How many have had that experience? How many of you same people have been in a similar situation where after you did something, you went, yeah, that was me. Same situation, yet look at the difference in results. One time you don't even want to talk about it, the other one you're happy to chat about it. How come? How come you're producing such varied behaviors in the same basic situation? And the answer is because your behavior was the result of the state that you were in at that time. See, state was basically the generator or the governor of human behavior. Your behaviors are the result of the state you're in. That's how you can explain times when you went, God, I can't even believe I did that. It's because you were in a state where you were not as resourceful as usual. So now the next question, of course, is, well, what creates state? Well, basically, two things generate state. One of the things that generates state that's most obvious is physiology. That is, how you physically feel will determine greatly how you're using your body, your biochemical functioning, your posture, your breathing pattern will definitely affect the kind of state you're in. If you're sitting in a posture that's sort of like this, and you're breathing really, you know, shallow, and you got this kind of tonality and stuff, do you really feel like you'd be like really motivated to do all kinds of stuff in your life? Probably not the most powerful state to be in, okay? Because that will affect you, won't it? When you're physically run down, do you not respond differently than when you're physically vibrant? Yes or no?
Yes.
Of course you do. So physiology tremendously affects state and therefore behavior. Okay. Now, the other thing that's equally powerful in affecting someone's state and thus their behavior is the way they represent the world inside themselves. We call these things internal representations. Internal representations, the way we represent what's going on inside our own head. In other words, the pictures that we make on our head, what we picture and how we picture it. What we say to ourselves and how we say it to ourselves, the tone of voice that we use in our head, those things affect our state. See, if you go, yeah, I really want to do this, or if you go, I really want to do this, doesn't that tonality make a difference in your state? You bet. So it's not just what you say, but how you say it. It's not just what you picture, but how you picture it. Those things affect state and determine behavior just as much as physiology does. The two work together. In fact, if you feel physically vibrant, you usually perceive the world differently, don't you? If you perceive the world differently, that also changes your physical vibrancy. Have you ever been in a situation where you're physically tired and then something caught your interest, really got you excited mentally, and all of a sudden you felt physically strong and energized? How many of you have had that experience? Of course. So these two are on what we call a cybernetic loop, where if you change one, the other one changes automatically. Okay, they're linked together. The ideal is to change them both simultaneously so they support you in going to the kind of state that'll support you in producing the kind of behavior that you want.
Behavior is the result of the state that we're in, and the state we are in is the result of how we represent things internally, meaning, again, what we picture in our minds and what we say or hear in our minds, as well as our biochemical functioning, our breathing patterns, our muscular tension and relaxation. If you learn to direct the way you represent things mentally and the way in which you use your body, you can direct any aspect of your life. For example, a woman came into me recently and she was very, very upset. She was extremely depressed and had been, according to her, for the last 12 years. Her response to me immediately as she walks in the room is, I can see how she's producing this state called depression. She's doing it by the way she uses her body. So she tells me on and on about all the depressing things she does and how she's even depressed when she's sleeping as she begins to weep and cry in front of me. And I simply turn to her and I say, "That's fascinating. How do you do that?" She looked at me quite startled. "What do you mean, how do I do this? I'm just depressed. I just feel so terrible." "Well, how do you get yourself to feel so terrible?" I asked her. She said, "I don't know. It just happens to me." I said, no, it doesn't just happen to you. You have to do certain things in your mind and certain things in your body to feel depressed. I said, you have to send certain messages. I explained to her, there are no results in your life, either emotional or behavioral, without some cause, without you taking some mental or physical action or a combination thereof. I said, what are you doing with your body that makes you feel depressed? She goes, "I don't know." I said, "Well, let me show you. If I were to take on your physiology, let's see if I can feel as depressed as you." And I began to contort my posture, and I began to drop my shoulders and look down and create muscular tension in my face and squint. I said, "Yeah, now I feel pretty lousy. Now let me mimic your voice tone." "Oh, I feel terrible." "Yeah," I said, "now I'm really feeling lousy." I said, "Now what are you picturing in your mind? What are you saying to yourself?" She goes, "Well, I'm just picturing the worst thing that could happen." I said, "Oh, yeah, now I feel totally depressed too. Now I know how I can do it. I just have to think this way and use my body this way consistently, and I'd be depressed." She looked at me and she smiled. I said, "Would you like to change?" She said, "Well, that's why I'm here." I said, "Well, start by changing the quality of your voice tone. Say, 'That's why I'm here,' and use a different tone of voice." She said, "That's why I'm here." I said, "No, try it a little differently. Say, 'That's why I'm here.'" She said, "That's why I'm here." All of a sudden, her face changed. Her body began to change. I said, "Sit the way you'd be sitting right now if you felt totally joyous and excited." She goes, "Well, I don't really know." I said, "Well, if you did know, show me how you'd sit." So she said, "Well, I guess," and she began to change her posture, which immediately sent new messages to her brain about how to feel. Your posture, your breathing pattern, your muscular tension or relaxation tells your brain and emotions how to feel. So she changed her posture, her shoulders came up, she began to breathe differently, her facial expression changed, she began to smile, and all of a sudden she felt very happy. I said, "Are you depressed now?" She said, "No." She said, "But I'll get depressed later." I said, "The only way you'll get depressed later is if you run your brain and your body in the way you were a few moments ago. Instead, develop the pattern of moving your body, walking, talking, breathing, having your face look like what it would look like if you were very happy. You will feel that way. For years, I've been teaching that if you want to change how you feel and how you behave, change the way you use your physiology. If, for example, you're depressed, but you put a smile on your face, you will not feel depressed. Just recently, scientists at the University of California have verified this. They have found that people are beating lie detectors by putting themselves in a physiology or a posture and breathing pattern similar to that of when they're telling the truth. As a result, they feel as if what they're saying is true, and they even fool a lie detector. Why not reprogram your own body by changing how you use your body and your thought processes? And what I'd like to do in this tape is show you some specific ways to make those changes. But first, remember, you're already producing results. So if you don't like the result you're getting, emotionally or behaviorally, change how you communicate to yourself. Change either what you're picturing in your mind or what you're hearing or saying to yourself, or change the way you use your body, or both. See, you have all the resources you really need to succeed in your life. The question is, can you get access to them in the appropriate place? I mean, haven't you had a time in your life when you snapped at somebody for no particular reason? It had nothing to do with them. It was just the state you were in. You weren't very resourceful, were you? And haven't you also had times in your life where somebody did something really terrible, but you were really compassionate in your response? It had to do with how your posture was, how your breathing was, how you were picturing things, how you looked at things in that time. You know, for centuries, man's been fascinated by ways to alter his states and thus his experience of life. He's tried fasting, drugs, ritual, music, sex, food, hypnosis, chanting. All these things will have their uses, and they all have their limitations. However, what I want you to do now is just learn how to take direct control. I've said before, your brain is like a biocomputer. All you have to do is punch in the signals of what results you want, and you'll get them. Why not just do it directly? It's all controlling and directing states. Really, I would say the quality of your life is not only the quality of your communication, but it's really based upon your ability to manage states. Maybe your goal should be an effective state manager, because by managing your states, you manage your emotions and thus your behaviors in life. That's why, for example, when we have toddlers, we make sure that they stay rested up, because we know as they get more tired, as their physiology changes, their positive responsiveness to the environment also changes. That's why we make sure they get a nap, so they're not cranky. Human beings, as they grow older, some of them still need naps. Some of them still need ways to have more energy, so they're not so cranky in their response. But remember, how we represent things, how we use our body, those are the keys. Those are the master tools to directing your brain, your emotion, your behavior, and your life. For example, how do you respond when a loved one arrives home hours late from when you expected them? Well, it depends on how you were representing why they're late. If during the 2 hours that you were waiting for them, you imagine that the reason they were late is they may have been in a car accident, and you imagine them bloody or possibly in a hospital, then when they arrive home, you might greet them with a state of concern. You might give them a big hug and say, "God, how are you?" If instead, while they were late for those 2 hours, you continue to represent to yourself the possibility mentally that the reason they were late is they didn't care about you, or because they were with someone else in a clandestine affair, then I guarantee you'll be in a different state when they arrive home, and you will probably treat them in a way that will cause them to want to have clandestine affairs, because you wouldn't be very pleasant to be around. Also, the other thing that would determine your response is if you were physically run down, you might respond quite differently than if you felt energized and vital and strong and happy. If because of your dietary patterns, your blood sugar is low, you're going to respond quite differently than if you have a dietary pattern that allows you to be biochemically healthy. Now, the next obvious question that came up for me was, okay, it's true, it seems, that human beings' behavior is the result of the state they're in. I mean, if I'm physically run down, I'm going to respond quite differently than if I'm physically vibrant and strong. But my question is, how come when people are in the same states, they behave differently? I mean, one person, when they feel loved by you or they love you, will express it by hugging you. Another person may just tell you and not hug you. Why do they behave differently? Well, the difference is their models of the world. Some people, for example, when they're angry, have one model in their brain of how to respond. Out of a state of anger, their model of responsiveness is to lash out, and that's their only choice. Other people have more elegant choices of how to communicate, how to change how they feel, how to change the way other people behave through their communication skills, and so they behave differently. I remember seeing some pictures of war in the Middle East and over in Cambodia, where I watched at one point on film a 13-year-old boy who went into a state of rage and anger and then picked up a machine gun and blew a bunch of people away. I mean, it was an unbelievably devastating scene. How could a young man do that at the age of 13 years old? Well, one reason is he was in a state of rage. But when you and I are in rage, we don't pick up an Uzi submachine gun and blow someone away. What's the difference? Well, in his environment, in the war-ravaged area of Cambodia, it seems like an appropriate response. He's seen other people do it, so when he's in that state, he behaves that way. This is why it's critical that, one, we manage our states, and that, two, we develop as many choices as possible on how to respond out of states, so that we learn that even if we are angry, what's the most elegant way in which to express that anger where it does not harm ourselves or others, but rather takes us closer to our goals. And this can be done by modeling successful people. So understanding how to direct your states is like understanding how to get the best out of yourself at any moment in time. When we learn how to master our states by directing our internal representations, that is what we picture and say to ourselves, and when we manage our body effectively, we literally learn to master our lives, our emotions, and our behaviors. And we can take things that may seem very difficult and make them very simple. For example, I was recently on an airplane with Ken Blanchard, the author of The 1 Minute Manager. And Ken was writing an article at the time for Golf Digest in which they asked him to go out and work with the best golf instructor in the United States and see if he could distill some of the key elements and make them simple and share them in an article. Well, Ken worked for the man for several days and took a few strokes off his golf game, and he was very excited about that. And he said that there was one challenge, though. And the challenge was, he said, you know, there's so much to remember that when I go up to hit the ball, it's hard to remember it all. And I told him very simply, you don't have to remember it. I said, have you ever hit a golf ball perfectly? He said, well, of course. I said, have you hit a golf ball perfectly more than once? He said, sure. I said, then how to hit a golf ball is already trained. It's already programmed into your nervous system. All you got to do is go back into the same state you were in when you hit a golf ball perfectly, and everything will happen automatically. He said, well, that sounds real good, but I just can't imagine it being that easy. I said, well, it is. Let me show you how. And what I had him do was go back to the times when he hit golf balls perfectly and reassociate to those experiences and get back in the same exact state and then create a triggering device so he could put himself in that state at any moment in time. Well, he got very excited by this. The next day he went out to play golf and he knocked 15 strokes off his golf game. If you don't know that much about golf, that's pretty much unheard of. He shot better than he had in almost 15 years of playing golf, all because he learned how to get in the most effective state. About 2 years ago, Life magazine was doing an article on me and my work, and I made several claims about the work that I'd done and the kind of results I produced with athletes. So one of the writers, who seemed to be a little bit harsh at the time and a bit of a doubting Thomas, which she had a right to be, said, well, let's see you produce the result with somebody right now. I said, well, get me an athlete. So we happened to be at my home at the time, and the Laker game was on, the Los Angeles Lakers. And there was a man named Byron Scott on there. He'd shot one of nine shots that day and scored 3 points. And Chick Hearn, the announcer, was talking about how terrible he'd played. Well, I said, get me him. He'd be a great example. And they did. I went up to Los Angeles the next afternoon, and I worked with Byron Scott, just showing him how to change his state briefly. Nothing very intense, nothing very long. But before I showed him, we let him just shoot free. And he shot around the courts, taking various shots, and he was shooting about one out of every three shots, effectively. And then I began to work with him. And the way I worked with him is I had him access the parts of his body and his brain, how he represented a shot when he made one. What was he thinking in his brain? What was he picturing unconsciously? What was he saying to himself? What were the quality of his movements like? How was he breathing? I did this with him for about 15 or 20 minutes, at the end of which we showed him how to create this same triggering device so that he could put himself in state consistently. Well, I gave him the basketball, and he made 28 shots in a row from every place on the court. He didn't miss after the 28th shot. His partner began to think, well, this isn't possible. He says, man, I'm telling you, I can't miss. And he went out the very next day, and he shot 8 of 12 shots and scored 22 points and was the second highest scorer in the game. He practiced with us on 3-point shots. And by the way, by the end of the season, he was one of the top 3-point shooters in the entire NBA. Now, I'm not suggesting that I programmed that in and made him the best 3-point shooter, but what I did do is assist him in getting into the state that would allow him to make use of the resources he spent a lifetime developing. I did the same thing with a man named Michael O'Brien, a swimmer. Michael was in the 1984 Olympics in the 1500 freestyle, and he was hoping to win a bronze, maybe a silver medal. But during his practice sessions, he was continuing to sabotage his success. He wasn't going for it full on. He had a certain level of fear. I showed him how to reprogram out the fear and how to access his ideal states on cue. He went out and beat the United States champion by over 6.5 seconds and won the gold. Once again, I couldn't have programmed that in. He spent a lifetime developing the resources, but I showed him how to get access to them. And just as you have developed resources through your lifetime that you may not be accessing now, you can by changing your state, by remembering times when you've been effective, embodying that physiology or posture, breathing pattern, facial expression, and seeing things and saying things to yourself the way you did then, you'll begin to feel similarly and produce the kinds of results that you deserve to produce now in your life. Great leaders and great motivators understand the power of state and how to change it in other people. The ability to change other people's states is a quality that can also change the quality of your life. I mean, haven't you ever walked into a restaurant and had the waiter or waitress walk up to you and say, "What do you want?" and be upset with you? And you haven't even done anything? Well, what's your response? Do you usually say, "Oh, this person's doing the best they can with the resources they have. They're in a poor state, so they're treating me poorly." It's highly unlikely. Usually we get upset as well. But in our getting upset, it doesn't change anything. We don't get better service. That person's still upset. What if instead you were to say, hey, this person is responding out of a poor state? They're not an unresourceful person. They're just in an unresourceful state. And I can change their state and change their behavior. How can one do this? Well, it's simple. Change the way that they're representing who you are. If they walk up and go, "What do you want?" you can go, "Nothing right now. I mean, I can see they're overworking you. Why don't you take your time and help everyone else, and when you have a chance, come on back and take my order." What's that going to do? The person's going to probably look back and go, "Oh, I'm sorry," and they're going to reevaluate the state they're in. They're going to say, "I'm sorry, I'm just stressed out because I didn't get any sleep last night, or I just argued with a cook, or I've been arguing with my boyfriend and I've been thinking about that, or the last people didn't leave me a tip," or whatever, something that's affecting their state. And they'll go, "No, I want to take your order." And you go, "No, please help everyone else first, then come back to me." They go, no, I want to help you." Okay. You can change people's states and have fun doing it. You could change a person's physiology. What if somebody came to you and they were real upset with you and you gave them a hug? Did you ever see your puppy dog? Doesn't your puppy know how to change your state? You start to yell at the puppy and it comes down and it puts its nose at your toes. That changes your physiology, changes your state, changes the way you behave towards it, doesn't it? And to be a leader, you've got to know how to change the states of other people. Dick Tomey is a master of state change. He's the head coach of the University of Hawaii football team. A good example of his skill was used in his game against Wyoming several years ago. By halftime, his team was being beat 22-0. They were being pushed all over the field by Wyoming and didn't even look like they belonged on the same field with them. At halftime, as the men began to walk into the locker room, it was obvious by their bowed shoulders and heads, the expressions on their faces, their physiology alone told you that they weren't going to go back out in the next half and access their greatest skills and win the game. But Tomey had an idea. He decided he'd change the way they were representing what 22-0 meant. And what he did was he pulled out a poster that he had formed, And on it, he had clippings of various newspaper articles about football teams that had come back from incredible margins. 32-0, where a team came back and won, 38-32. 25-point leads, where the team came back and turned it around. Well, the team members began to gather around and read these articles, and pretty soon they began to represent to themselves that they could win, that they could tap their top potential, that they could go out and win the game. The result? In this new state of resourcefulness, the team went out and held Wyoming scoreless in the second half, outscoring them and winning the game 28-22. That's the power of state. Now, let's work on some specific tools on how to change it. We understand the power. We know we can change things, but how do we do that? Well, I said one way to do it is change what you're representing. In NLP terminology, we call that reframing. Reframing simply means changing the person's way of evaluating what something means. It's important for us to remember that no matter what happens in our life, it doesn't have any meaning except the meaning we give it. Now, it's true that many of us are on automatic. Many of us go with what the culture teaches us, that if we try something that doesn't work, it means we failed, and then we feel bad. You don't have to feel bad. You can change it into an opportunity for learning. That would be an example of reframing. If you look at failures as learning experiences, as opportunities, then it immediately changes how you feel about it, the state you're in, and how much of your resourcefulness you can use in the future. Nothing has any power over you except the power you give it through your own conscious thoughts. I mean, for example, what if I were to ask you, what's the meaning of a footstep? You'd probably get a weird look on your face and say, what are you talking about? Well, let's think about it for a minute. If you're walking down a busy street, there's so many footsteps that you don't even hear them. In that situation, they don't have any effective meaning. But what if you're sitting home alone, hearing the steps moving toward you? Do the footsteps have meaning then? They sure do. The same signal, meaning the sound of the footsteps, will have many different meanings depending upon what it has meant to you in similar situations in the past. Your past experience may provide you with a context for that signal and thus determine whether it relaxes or frightens you. For example, if you hear the sounds of footsteps at a certain time, you might classify that sound as that of your spouse coming home early. People who have experienced burglaries, though, may think it means an intruder. Thus, the meaning of any experience in life depends entirely upon the frame we put around it. If you change your frame of reference, the context in which you perceive something, then the meaning changes instantly. This process is called reframing. And there are basically two ways that you can change a person's frame of reference. You can do what we call content reframing or context reframing. Both alter your internal representations by resolving internal pain or conflict, therefore putting you in a more resourceful state. Context reframing involves taking an experience that seems to be bad, upsetting, or undesirable, and showing how that same behavior or experience is actually a great advantage in another context. Children's literature is filled with examples of context reframing. Rudolph's nose, which made people make fun of him, was actually an advantage and made him a hero in the context of a dark and snowy night when Santa was in great need. The ugly duckling suffered great pain because he was so different, but his difference was his beauty as a full-grown swan. Context reframing is invaluable in business. Great innovations are made by those who know how to reframe activities and problems into potential resources in other situations. For example, oil was once considered something that destroyed the value of land for crop usage. Yet look at its value today. Several years ago, lumber yards had difficulties disposing of large amounts of waste sawdust from their mills. One guy took that waste and decided to put it to use in another context. He pressed it together with glue and lighter fluid and created something called Presto Logs. After contracting to take away all of this quote-unquote worthless sawdust from these sawmills, he began to market his product. And for 2 years, he had a multi-million dollar business with his major resource costing him nothing. But really, that's all an entrepreneur is, a reframer, someone who endows resources with new wealth-producing capacity. Content reframing involves taking the exact situation and changing what it means. For example, you might say your son never stops talking. He never shuts up. If you wanted to create a content reframe for this, you might say that he certainly must be a very intelligent young man to have so much to say. There's the story of a famous army general who was known to have reframed his troops during a heavy enemy attack by saying, "We're not retreating, we're just advancing in another direction." When a person close to us dies, most people in our culture are sad. Why? Many reasons. Feelings of loss, for instance. Yet some people are joyous. How come? They reframe death to mean something else. It means to them that the deceased is always with them, that nothing in the universe is ever destroyed, that things just change form. Some consider death to be graduation to a higher level of existence, so they're joyous about it. Another kind of content reframe is to actually change the way you see, hear, or represent a situation drastically. If you're upset about what someone said to you, you may envision yourself smiling as he says the same negative words expressed in the tonality of your favorite singer. Or you may see the same experience where a person upset you in your mind, only this time, as you see them speaking, surround them with your favorite color. Or you may even change what that person said to you in the first place and re-experience it in your mind in this new way. Hear them apologize to you. Or you could see him speaking to you from a perspective that puts you very high above him, looking down on him. Reframing the same stimulus changes the meaning sent to the brain and thus the states and behaviors associated with it. Let's do an example. What I'd like you to do right now is let's do an exercise so we can stop talking about this and applying it. Right now, I want you to just take a moment and I want you to think about something that's upsetting you or has upset you, something that's frustrated you or angered you or upset you in some way. It doesn't have to be a major one. And what I'd like you to do is just go to the end of that experience as if it was a movie and run through it so you get to the end of it. And what I want you to do is sit up nice and straight, or stand up if you will, if you can, breathe fully, and I want you to act as if you're the most devious young child on the planet and you're about to do something really fun, silly, and sinister. And what I want you to do is I want you, when I say now, to immediately start running that same experience backwards, like a movie, and seeing everything happening in reverse at incredible speed. And while you do this, I want you to change it so if there are people involved with the situation, you change the color around them. Their facial expressions, maybe the size of their nose, maybe they shrink down, maybe they grow. We're going to do a content reframe. So what I want you to do is just begin with me right now. Close your eyes and go back to the end of that situation, the thing that was bugging you, and right now start running it backwards very, very rapidly and keep running it backwards. See things change. See the person's eyes getting really big, then shrinking down. See their nose getting long. See their ears getting bigger. Hear the sounds, M-I-C-K-E-Y. Listen to the sounds of a circus as it's all happening here. Faster, faster. Change it. Change the color. Change the size. Have them apologize. Have them shrink down. Have them grow up. Talk to them. Tell them. Listen. Change different aspects of it. Continuously move it at fast speeds and bring it all the way back to the very beginning. Then run it forwards at incredibly fast speeds and change even more. Change the color, change the shape, change the sides, change their tone of voice so they sound like Mickey Mouse. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do this. Run it all the way through, have fun, smile, do it all the way through the end. Then run it backwards again at a different speed, even more rapidly. All the way through, run it back and forwards, keep changing it. And after you've done that a few times, then stop and run it through forward. And notice what you see now when you think of the situation and notice how you feel. If you've done this effectively, as I'm sure you have, you're probably either laughing, smiling, or you at least have neutral feelings about something that used to bother you. What have we done? We've changed the way you represent that situation to your brain, and thus the way you feel about the situation. Now you are at a level of choice instead of in reaction. It doesn't take a lot of time to change how we feel about things. A lot of people try and teach us that in order to create change, we have to go back and re-experience all our stuff and let go of it, because otherwise it builds up inside till it explodes. That's not an accurate model or metaphor for how the human nervous system works. A better metaphor might be that your mind and body are a lot like a jukebox, and the experiences of your life are like discs. And what happens is, life comes along and certain things, when you remember them, it's like pushing a button. And when you push that button, some buttons will push sad songs, others push happy songs. So what do you want to do in life? Well, one option is to try and only push the buttons that play happy songs. But that's not always easy, because there are other people that come by and want to play with your jukebox and push some of your buttons. So you have another option. You can reprogram the buttons. So now when you push the button that used to play a sad song, when it goes to play it, you've changed the disc. You've re-recorded over it a new movie in your mind, as you just did. So now when that situation happens and the button is pushed, you can just smile, or you can just feel neutral about it instead of being in reaction. You wouldn't be concerned that if a person didn't listen to all the discs in their jukebox, that the jukebox would explode and overflow onto everyone else. Because you know you don't have to play all the discs. You can re-record them or you can replace them. Your brain is very similar. You can take any experience and re-record over it. You can change your mental movies, change the way you feel from this day forward, and you can do it in moments about just about anything.